Find the lyrics.
I ain't tryna. Yeah, ain't tryna be cool like you. Wobbling around in your high heel shoes, I'm clumsy. Made friends with the floor. 2 for 1, you know what buy for. And 2 left feet, you know I always drop. First thing a girl did was a bop. I'm the whole dude, cake and a cherry on top. Shook up the bottom, made a good girl pop.
What is up, Wisconsin? I am back. It's Anya, the producer for the Maggie Dawn Show, which you are listening to now. Hi. Welcome to day 2 of the Anya Takeover. If you liked yesterday, what's wrong with you? Yesterday was crazy. But if you did like it, that's a lot of what we're going to be doing here today. If you heard yesterday's episode, I opened by saying that I had a secret rule for myself when I decided I would go live for Maggie on occasion. My secret rule was that I really didn't want to try to talk about Israel because it's just such a big topic. And then, of course, the week that I do a 2-day takeover is the week that the single largest thing in the news anywhere in the world is Israel and the ongoing conflict there. So when I woke up in a cold sweat at 6 a.m. this morning and thought, dear Lord, what am I going to get on the air and talk about for an hour? There was one topic. The one topic I didn't want to talk about. So tonight is not about Israel so much as it is everything you can do surrounding this topic. And if you're thinking, hey, I want nothing to do with that. I don't support the existence of that place. I don't support people going there. I want nothing to do with Israel. Hey, great news. What I'm about to tell you is part of that. And no, it's not some subversive secret that no one knows. It's not some sort of organization I'm going to send you towards. It's a really simple idea, and it's this. If you are someone who has an issue with Israel, I get it. First of all, I've got like 100 of them, right? And that's speaking as someone who doesn't hate the place the way that a lot of people do. I just think, yeah, there's a lot of room for improvement, right? You have to start with this question. Why on earth would people from all over the world, be it America, Russia, South Africa, Brazil, wherever they're coming from, why would they leave wherever it is that they are to go to this teeny tiny strip of land in the middle of what feels like nowhere? Okay, I've had to fly in and out of there 4 times. Let me tell you, it feels like nowhere for a lot of it, okay? Why would people who otherwise live somewhere completely different pick up and take their families or maybe themselves alone, knowing no one else there? Why would they go? Why would they leave and go to Israel? And the answer is horrifyingly simple. Because for many of them, many of the Jewish people who flee wherever they are to move to Israel, to make Aliyah, as it's called, it is leave where they are or die trying to remain there, right? So if you really, really find it distasteful that these Jewish people who are otherwise from America or Europe, Russia, wherever else, are going to this place that you feel we don't belong in, okay, I have a solution. Start making the places you live in right now safe for Jews to live into. What does that mean? Does that mean wrapping everything in some sort of Jewish-friendly bubble wrap? No, we're pretty tough people. Does that mean every grocery store in a 50-mile radius needs to cease its sales of pork and shrimp? No, of course not. We're not like that. We're mostly chill most of the time, I think. It means wherever it is you are, Milwaukee, Wausau, Park Falls, across the state, across the nation, across the world, there are almost certainly Jews or a Jew in your midst. And there is certainly, without a shadow of a doubt, someone in your midst who hates them. That's true for many topics. There is just about anywhere you go, in your midst? Someone who hates women. Someone in your midst who hates people of color. Someone in your midst who hates LGBTQ people, right? These are all hatreds of a feather. These are all faces of fascism we've seen. But it's always confusing to me when folks are distressed that Jews have the audacity to flee oppression and violence if and when an opportunity comes up. And a fantastic way for you to cut back, and this is the great thing, it costs you $0.00. You don't have to change your lifestyle, your diet, or your hair color. All you have to do is exist in a way that says, hey, I don't hate Jewish people, and I will not stand for there to be people who hate Jewish people around me. And you will suddenly see that your Jewish neighbor retention, wherever it is that you live, goes through the roof. And here's the horrifying thing. There are people where you live that specifically don't want that. There are people where you live who are overjoyed that every Jewish person who's ever moved into your town has subsequently left and they don't care where they went. That's the thing. You don't care where we go until you do care where we go, right? It's hard to speak on the topic of what it means to be displaced, what it means to displace people, what it means to have a nation, not have a nation, have a home, not have a home. When I was born here in Wisconsin and I've lived in Wisconsin my whole life, and yet I feel like the stranger in the strange land. I was born in Stevens Point. I grew up near Park Falls for many years, then moved to Wausau. Now I live in Milwaukee. I have spent all but 3 months of my life, 3 months I worked in Pennsylvania. Other than that, every job I've ever worked, every penny I've spent, I've left the state. That doesn't make sense. But this life that I've spent has been here, and yet I'm made to feel that I'm not supposed to be here. So that is what today's show really is about. It's not about Israel, but it is. And it's not about what's happening there, but it is. It is about anti-Semitism in Wisconsin. That is today's show. So if you have questions, if you have comments, today would be a great day to utilize the fantastic tool that we have through the Civic Media app, which is you can text us. I don't know if you know this. If you go on your phone and you go to the App Store, if you have an Apple phone, it's just called App Store. If you have an Android, it's probably called Google Play Store. And you search Civic Media, the icon is a C and an M. You download that, you pick your station, and you can write on your phone directly to me, and I have it up on the screen. So I'm young, I'm Gen Z. You guys already know that about me. I strongly prefer a text because calls are scary. I don't know what some of you people are going to say. I don't know, and I don't like conflict that much, right? That's why I only talk about some of the most complex and conflicting issues of our time, right? Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I know. So to dive into it, I want to give just the slightest bit of background on me. I was not raised Jewish. I found Judaism as an adult. I converted, blah, blah, blah. It's a complex and confusing life that I have lived that would take too many podcasts to explain. And frankly, not all of you need to hear it. I like to have my secrets, right? But let me say very simply that I was not raised by Jewish people. My home was not Jewish. None of these things. So in 2015, 2016, when I started floating the idea to friends in the area of Wausau that I might convert to Judaism, I was met with a really shocking response. Because when I came out to them as bisexual, or at least at the time, whatever term I used to say, hey, I don't think I'm just like completely straight. I think there's other stuff going on here. I was met with a fairly positive response. I met some pushback. People still have some old-fashioned ways of thinking. That's fine. But overwhelmingly, my friends who were theater friends and band geeks and stuff were really, really chill with the idea of me being bi. When I floated the idea to them that maybe I wasn't just an ex-Christian atheist and that maybe I had this interest in looking into this religion that none of them practiced or had ever really heard of beyond Fiddler on the Roof, the response was not nearly as open, which is confusing. Doesn't make sense to me, didn't make sense to me then, still doesn't. The next thing that really didn't make sense was that the summer of 2016, leading up to the later election of Donald Trump and a lot of other craziness, that summer, my family woke up one morning in Marathon, just outside of Wausau, to find that a swastika had been drawn. Not in our driveway, not on our driveway, but the road directly in front of our driveway. And without doxing too much of my childhood neighborhood, I'll just say my driveway and where that swastika was, there is no contention who that was for. There is no question. That's not part of the what I assume must be an ongoing investigation, because 7 years ago, Wausau PD told me they'd get back to me next weekend about it. Let me know, boys. Did you ever catch him? Did you go through the whole thing without me? I guess I don't know. But if your thought is, okay, I get your point. Jews won't flee if the place they live in is safe. Fine. But come on, Wisconsin, Israel, the dairy state versus the epicenter of conflict and warfare. Come on, Anya, think with your head. Surely Wisconsin is safer than fleeing to the Middle East and living out the rest of your life in a place totally different from how you've ever lived it. I wish I could agree. And as we're going to get into with the rest of today's show, I have concerns. I have things I need to bring up before you say that that's the way this state is. Taking you to the break is Doja Cat. If you didn't already know, she's Jewish. Fantastic little tidbit I found out. And in fact, all of today's music is going to be by various Jewish creators or covers of Jewish creators. This is Vegas from the film Elvis. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show with this, someone who is remarkably not Maggie Dawn. This instead is her producer, Anya, talking to you today about anti-Semitism in Wisconsin as I, a lifelong Wisconsinite and part-time Jew, has experienced it. To talk about safety is to talk about safety of mind before anything else. If you've ever woken up in the middle of the night to hearing something move downstairs, you know just as well as I do that you could have a million locks on the door. You could have every guarantee of safety. And against the fears that your mind is able to come up with, none of those locks and security measures matter, because in that moment, you are afraid. You are afraid that you are going to get hurt. You are afraid that people you care about are going to get hurt. And that oftentimes overrides so much of logical thought, right? If you've ever leaped up out of bed and grabbed whatever you had next to you, like you were going to fight off whatever home invader there was with, what, a baseball bat and your tidy whities, sure, I believe in you. Okay. But all of this is to say that for as many unwarranted fears that there are of things that go bump in the night, there's also something to be said for pattern recognition. And if you're Jewish, part of your upbringing has been inherently the study of history. It has to be. To not study history as a Jewish person is to simply take the blueprints for like one's own destruction and go, thanks, I don't need to see that. I'll play with whatever cards I'm dealt, which is to say, it's a really stupid thing to do. When you know these patterns, when you see these things, when the same statements that I studied in school when studying the extremism of the literal Nazi regime in Germany, the same statements are being said by proponents of right-wing nonsense here in the U.S., abroad in Israel, across the world, when these same statements are being regurgitated almost 100 years later, 80-some years later, yeah, I shake a little in my boots. I get a little nervous. Here are some instances in my life where I have started to think, or where what has caused me to think, do I need to flee Wisconsin so that I am able to practice my religion and be visibly a member of my religion without being killed? Do I need to leave the state that I was born in, did all of my education in, graduated from high school and college in? The vast majority of my family is here. And yet, I am not safe in this, what is supposed to be my home too, right? Here are some other times. I told you about the swastika incident. During my time at university at UWM, while out in Spates Plaza, which is like a large open area in between several buildings on campus, kind of an area different clubs can put a table out and talk about what they offer. A group I was a part of did something like that for a Jewish holiday called Yom HaZikaron, which is inherently tied to the state of Israel, yes, but the take that we had on it was, let's go out into the center of campus, out of our little building, out into this very open area, and we're going to bring hot dogs and a grill, obviously, for the hot dogs and cupcakes. And we had artists come in and paint people's shirts. And you can say, what are hot dogs and cupcakes in comparison to the very complex geopolitical issue that is the Middle East? To which I say, I don't know, I guess nothing other than the possibility to form long-lasting relationships, talk these issues out, and maybe move towards a future where peace is a possibility. I don't know, man. I was in college. This was something that was supposed to be fun. And what we were met with was an individual who was a student of the school whose name I won't say on radio because I truly don't know the legality of that, but I know his name. Went to the on-campus arts and crafts department and made himself a big sign that he held over his head that said gas with a swastika. And that word gas was in between three sets of parentheses, a dog whistle that if you're not familiar with, when I say three sets of parentheses, think open, open, open parentheses, three of them, and then a word, and then three closed on the other side, okay? That is a dog whistle, a secret way online to say that someone is Jewish. So for example, if someone just wrote the name Mark Zuckerberg out like normal, okay, that's Mark Zuckerberg. But suddenly someone starts tweeting about how all the issues in the world are Mark Zuckerberg's fault with those three parentheses, it takes on a very different tone. So let me reiterate for you. Cupcakes, hot dogs, artists, an interest in peace, and a flagrant Jewish attitude met with a sign with a swastika that said gas, with a dog whistle inherently used to mean Jews. 2 weeks later, I was on a plane to Poland to finish up my Holocaust fellowship to bear witness to what happened to our people 80-some years ago. My preamble to that flight, the taste in my mouth of Wisconsin when I left, was a little man with a big sign and what felt like absolutely no support from anyone who mattered. Not to say our Jewish community didn't show support and they matter, of course. But I had to join a commission, a task force, to convince the university that what happened was wrong And frankly, when I left, I don't know if they still knew it. When we come back, I'll take your calls, I'll take your texts. Taking you to the break is another Jewish icon. Hold on. If you didn't know already, Carly Simon. I just found that out today. I'm so excited. This is my favorite song by her. One of my favorite songs of all time. You're So Vain. Hey, is this about me? Not really. My hope is to make some really good radio. That's a totally different form of art. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show with me. Not Maggie Dawn, but instead Anya, her producer. We're talking about, for as chipper as I sound, we are talking about anti-Semitism in Wisconsin as I have experienced it. And the way that I've experienced it is across the state, up and down, east and west, from people on the right, from people on the left. People of all various backgrounds, the one thing that seems to unite them so often, in fact, maybe one of the only things that I find unites people, no matter how different they could be, is that they hate Jews. Now I've done the math on this for years, and I'm not really good at math, so you fact check me here. If you disagree with someone on 99% of the issues, you hate most of the same stuff. Or sorry, you hate most of the stuff that they like, right? 99 times out of 100, they say something, your response is going to be, no, that's not right. Would you feel worried about your worldview? Would you feel worried that maybe you and your sense of reality were just a little bit off kilter? If you and that person you disagreed with on 99 out of 100 issues suddenly came to a very impassioned, very real agreement that you both hate a certain type of person, imagine you could look down their list. Oh, well, I hate this person and this person and this person. And in your mind, you're like, those are all perfectly fine people. What is wrong with you? You bigot. You absolute monster. What is your issue with those folks? But you get to the bottom of the list and it says, oh, and also Jews. And then you go, oh, yeah, no questions. I have found that leftists who are otherwise completely anti-capitalist, anti-fascist, want nothing to do with anything that could even have a whiff of Nazism on it, will suddenly completely subvert expectation when the topic becomes Jews and protections for Jews and the ensuring that what has happened in the past does not happen again, that never again is now and always has been. How is it that I can walk up to two people who differ on such an insane level and they share this discomfort? At least one someone is wrong. At least one someone is being hypocritical. At least one of these two people has to go back to the closet and change. Because you're wearing the same outfit and neither of you look good in it. To answer some texts, someone wrote, and I really appreciate this. Thank you for sharing your story. Can you give us some tips about how schools can make our Jewish families feel safe, valued, and welcome? Hey, here's the first step. The fact that so many people and so many districts don't even care to ask what I've just articulated this texter has asked. The number of adult human beings educated from start to finish in America who I have had to say, no, Judaism isn't the one with Jesus. We're different. The number of adults I have had to say to, yeah, Jews have birthdays. What are you talking about? The number of adult human beings I have had to say, why, what horns? What are you asking about? What are you on? Is astounding. And especially in schools. Before joining civic media, I was in Jewish education, Jewish secondary supplemental after school education, right? And my kids would come to me. What'd you do in school today? Oh, we finally talked about Judaism. Oh, how? Oh, our teacher introduced Judaism by starting the Holocaust unit. And that was the first any of my peers ever heard that there was anything other than Christianity. I would know. I am now a Jewish person. I converted in 2019. But in the lead up to that, I was a non-Jewish kid. And when I was a non-Jewish third grader, my school had a fair for the older students to, everyone had to do a project about World War II. Some people made models of the planes that were used. Some people made replicas of the outfits people would have worn. And some people, like this one kid I was unfortunate enough to walk up to, made a popsicle stick diorama of Auschwitz and told me that this was where the bad Jews had been sent, a place with poison showers and tunnels underneath. In my mind, I can still see that kid, and I think sometimes that if he crossed the street in front of me, I would be able to recognize him even almost 20-some years later, 15-some years later, because that was the first moment I heard of a people that I was going to join one day. And the information I was given was this is where the bad Jews were sent. No, no. Oh my God, no. And also, if that had been my only education on the subject, God help me, what would I have thought of all these people talking about how important it is to remember the Holocaust? Because according to the singular education I was given on it at the time, everyone who died in it was one of those bad Jews. No, obviously not. But this is the level of education that is allowed to be considered appropriate in this state and in this country. That human beings can get through algebra and biology, chemistry and physics, and still not be able to figure out that, no, Jewish people don't have tails. That is something I have been asked by adult human beings in this state. Because that is how bad of a job we have done. I'll count myself into it. We have done in promoting the idea that America is a place where people can practice their religions free of harm. When you exist in a country where some people say anything other than my religion is Satanism, and then no one does anything to educate them differently, yeah, we start getting harassed for being Satanists when we're not even the ones who have Satan. That's you guys. That's yours. He's with you. Our biggest problem is, other than all the problems of the world, it's like IBS and stuff. And what if grandma makes way too much Kugel? And I'm not a big fan of Kugel already, so I don't know how I'm going to finish all of this, right? I have to put some levity in or I'll go insane. But thank you for the question. In a more actionable way, hey, please, please, please reach out to your Jewish friends. Reach out to your Jewish neighbors. And if you're going, I don't have any, hey, friend, look around, please. Ask your kids, hey, are there any kids in your class who are like, you know, when it's Christmas break and you guys decorate your Christmas decorations despite you going to a public school, who is that in your class? Do they seem supported? Do they seem heard? What about in your workplace? Are you hearing your coworkers speak up? Hey, could we not have an all-day training session scheduled on the holiest day of the Jewish calendar, please? Could we maybe move it to any other option? When Jews have to routinely go through the equivalent of important work and life events being scheduled on our versions of like Christmas and Easter and other meaningful days, yeah, it's not hard to figure out why maybe we don't want to be here sometimes, why I sometimes don't want to be here. the isolation that we're pushed into, the isolation that so many communities that are not part of the hegemony are pushed into. I speak for Jews in this moment because who else? I can't speak for someone who isn't me in this way. It wouldn't be appropriate, right? But the story is 99% the same and 1% different for so many of these things. If you're not the norm, which in this case has often been Christian, and there are significant enough differences in every variation of Christianity and Judaism that no, you cannot assume that you know by knowing one, you know the other. That's simply not true. No wonder there is this feeling, this yearning to go somewhere where Hanukkah is not this joke secondary under Christmas thing. It's something where it's valued that you want to see your family at that time, right? It's no wonder that so many of my young friends who have no interest in moving overseas, whose whole lives have been here in America, sometimes say, man, my boss was really anti-Semitic to me again. And every time it happens, I think I'm just going to pick up and move to Tel Aviv and, I don't know, be a Tel Aviv beach bum for the rest of my life. Because at least then when I say, hey, could I go home for Passover? The answer is, no, we can't spare you. And not, what's Passover? To be treated with the human amount of indifference and disrespect by the system that all of you guys get, as opposed to that level of disrespect and then some. One thing to highlight, when I finished converting, something one does when one finishes converting or at many other points in the life cycle is you go to a mikveh. This is where the Christian practice gets its concept for things like baptisms from. It's kind of the like predecessor to that practice. I had to go to mikveh. And I didn't go to the one in Milwaukee for just a number of reasons. I had to go to Madison, and that was a trip for me at that time. And I needed out of my classes. I needed an excused absence. And according to the law and the law of the university I was at, religious observance is an excused absence. And I needed that because I had more than enough unexcused absences. I liked to sleep in college. But this time it was for real. And I went up to this professor who I otherwise felt I had a really good rapport with, and a professor who was very countercultural, very screw the man, I'm going to do my own thing, I'm going to hold up the little man. I was really, really enamored with this person. And when I approached them and explained I had to commute from Milwaukee to Madison for this and that I would be missing their class, I was really shocked because this person rolled their eyes and said, well, look, if you can get one of your church elders to sign off on this, I might consider it an excused absence. And the weight in each of those words let me know that I was not valued by that person anymore. And that went with me for the rest of my college experience. The same way that seeing this man with this sign in Spates Plaza as we tried to promote the concept of peace, the concept of dialogue, the concept of eating a good kosher hot dog and a cupcake on a sunny day and talking with your fellow human about things. All of these memories, all of these times are riddled with the unremovable stain of anti-Semitism and the deep sadness it brought, the horror it brought. In the days following that guy, that's all I can call him really, that guy who showed up on campus. And in the days following, this was towards the end of the school year rolling into finals, I was afraid, and many of my friends were afraid, to go to school for fear that he or someone who saw the news coverage of these events would walk into the next lecture of Jewish world history or walk into the next meeting of basic Hebrew 101 and open fire. I was convinced, my friends were convinced, and we had to go to school anyways. What did I learn at the end of that semester? Couldn't tell you. Looking back, I don't remember what classes I was in. But I know how I felt. And I felt scared. Taking you into the break is something really special. Again, we try to only play female artists here on the Maggie Dawn Show. So I needed to get some Bob Dylan in here. He's my guy. He's Jewish, hey, if you didn't know it. I hate to sound like an Adam Sandler song, but all your favorite people are Jewish. This is from the upcoming Bob Dylan musical, Girl from the North Country, and this is Rolling Stone.
Dress so fine, he threw the bombs of time in your prime, didn't you? People call sleepy with all you're bound to fall. You thought they were all.
Currently, it's 52 degrees. Scattered.
Man walks down the street, he says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle now? Rest of my life is so hard, I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot at redemption, don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger, dogs in the moonlight, far away in my welly door.
Oh, I'm in love with that cover. If you don't recognize it, that is a cover of You Can Call Me Al, the fantastic, uplifting, super fun Paul Simon song. Paul Simon, hey, what do you think I'm going to say? If you don't know it already, say it with me. Jewish person, super cool. Hey, I'm going to say it again because I never get enough chances to say it. So much of the things that you like in life, let me back up. If you're a bigot, if you're someone who dislikes, frankly, any group, you could get, I think, really, really, really granular. You could say, I just cannot stand like this one group. It doesn't matter who you pick on the face of this earth. You pick someone, you pick a group, you pick people who have contributed to the good that is in your life. What do I mean by that? It's really simple ethics to say something to the tune of, hey, if you hate African-American people, then I don't want to ever see you eating peanut butter, because peanut butter was invented by someone who was African-American, right? And if you take that, you know, especially when the stereotypes against a group are something like, this is a group who is lazy, this is a group who is cruel, this is a group who is dumb, any of these stereotypes, they can never hold up. Because there is no group that you can single out from the face of the earth and go, they've contributed nothing. I say that not to be a braggart. I say that not to offer some idea that earth needs to be a meritocracy. But rather to say that, look, put your money where your mouth is. If you hate anyone, then cease your enjoyment of the things that their people have invented, right? Cease your taking from them. If you're so good and you're so mighty and we're so weak, so frail and so low below you, then what do you need us for? Leave us alone. As I say all of this, I'll share a fun fact before I roll into human interest. Hey, Jews invented Viagra. Be careful. You might not be having that fun of a weekend if you keep messing with us, all right? All right. Look, I have a history lesson for you. That's how we're ending the show. Something that I think could help Wisconsin schools, like the previous texter mentioned, and something that I think could help all of us is to remember that this ongoing connection to a world that believes in the right for all people to exist as they are is to find places where small history meets large history. What do I mean by that? I mean that there are heroes from our hometowns. There are people from Wisconsin who have gone on, obviously, I'm not saying this like it's a new fact, but who have gone on to contribute to great change in the world. And one of them is someone who I think is important for us to talk about today of all days, which is Mildred Fish Harnack. She was born here in Milwaukee in, I've misplaced my notes. She was born here in Milwaukee in 1902. She went to West Division High. She went to UW-Madison, then moved to Germany with her husband, a man she had met while living here. And she joined the resistance against the Nazis as the 20s turned into the 30s. And by the early 40s, she was holding speeches talking about anti-fascist literature in Berlin, in Germany. And in 1943, when Nazi spies caught them speaking over observed radio lines, she was tried and initially sentenced to 6 years. I'm not sure if it said in prison or in a prison camp. I didn't see that part. Because she would never see those prisons either way. Hitler would personally write that year to ensure that Mildred, the daughter of Milwaukee, was retried, found guilty, and sentenced to die by being beheaded. She is the single American whose death warrant was signed by Hitler personally. She left the safety of Wisconsin. She left the safety of Madison. She left the safety of being a literaturist, a person who knows literature very well. Left behind book clubs and West Division High School to attempt to fight for what she felt was right. And in return, her head was severed from her body at the direction of Adolf Hitler himself. And afterwards, her body was donated against her will to Humboldt University, where it was studied for the effects of stress that the menstrual cycle caused her. She was later buried, and she's one of the few revolutionaries whose grave site is known. Everyone else, we don't know where they went. There are things you can do. There are things you have to do. No matter how you feel about what is happening thousands of miles away, one of those things you have to do is understand that at the end of the day, all that we are asking for is to be allowed to exist without persecution. I'm not asking you to be kosher. I'm not asking you to speak Hebrew. I'm asking you to accept the very complex idea that in the nation of America, there are people who practice other religions that are just as valid, just as real, and deserve to be just as free from persecution as yours does. Be yours Christianity or atheism or Islam or anything else under the sun. I don't know whose quote this was originally, so I'll just attribute it to a number of very smart rabbis that I've been able to study in my life. That religions are 99.9% the same. But we spend the majority of our time killing ourselves and killing each other over the 0.1% that is different. I ask you to go into this week and seek out your Jewish friends. And again, if you don't have any, go make some. It's time. And to seek out anything that could be beholden in that 99.9%. Because that 0.1% is, in every other version of statistics, negligible. So why does it take up the majority of my time, my fear, my angst, my existential terror at this country, wondering if I have the same right enshrined as the rest of you to be Jewish, and if my students do? I wanted to close by promoting an event in Madison tonight, and then I realized while driving here that if I did, there's a potential that someone who's boiling over with rage at me would show up there and cause harm, which is horrifying because it's going to be a great event without you. So here's all I'll say. Somewhere right now, people are gathering for peace. Are you one of them? You can be. Wherever you are. This is Nofar Cohen with Leonard Cohen's fantastic song, Hallelujah.